Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 114 for June 25th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
In the month of tech continues, I'm Joe Steinkamp.
All right. Well, in our top news this week, I'm babysitting a rat terrier.
Cool.
My father-in-law's rat terrier, who is not real happy about being away from his home. So if you hear odd sounds in the podcast that Patrick can't get rid of, that's all it is. It's okay.
Jamie, let him out of the box. That would help.
Yeah. Oh, you mean I got to untie him?
Yeah. The dogs tend to like freedom and roaming and, you know, running, and especially
if
terriers.
This dog got out the door, he would head for the hills. Trust me.
He's a homing dog.
I'd never see him again. Yes. No, we actually do have tech news, though. Kind of important AT tech news. Kind of looked like for a while that WebVism was gone. As a matter of fact, I thought it was. And while I was preparing other things, you guys tell me it's actually back for the moment. Is that right?
For the moment, yes. WebVism, for the past week or so, this has been sort of a major discussion on Twitter and email lists and so on. For those who don't know, WebVism is a method by which you can solve CAPTCHAs using a Firefox extension. And the domain expired and apparently wasn't renewed, so it was impossible to use the service. There was a workaround because it looks like the service itself was still up. It just didn't have a domain pointing to it. So we have an article here talking about how to edit your host's file to get the service back should it go down again. But very recently, it appears the server has come back online and people can use it in the normal way again for the moment. We haven't heard anything from the developers of the extension, so we don't know what happened or why or if the return of the service is permanent or anything like that. But it sort of makes you stop and think. WebVism is a free service, which the site does prompt for donations if you do believe in the project. And if you're using it, I think that does indicate, you know, some support in your mind for the project. And so I don't know if the domain renewal didn't happen because of a lack of funds or what have you. But again, it goes to show that if there's a service or a piece of software that is, quote, free, but does ask for donations, just keep in mind that it does take hard work and it does take money to sort of pay to keep the lights on for some services. And so if you like something, support it.
We've said it before, code monkey need Fritos. And
that's right.
This is kind of true. You have services like Celona, which unfortunately are no longer with us, and other free services that have come up and down. And you've heard us all talk about on this podcast to donate to NVDA because those guys, you know, survive off of grants and donations. And as many people who love these services, and I see it on Twitter and Facebook all the time, you have to remember that there is a lot of cost involved in doing anything like what they're doing. And so don't take it for granted. Remember that these guys, you know, are doing it because they feel there's a need or that they're helping people. But at the same time, they still need help of their own in order to make sure that everything runs smoothly. And the number of, you know, Firefox users who you could say up or down how many there were a lot that came out of the woodwork when WebVism stopped. And I think it's important that, you know, all you guys take note. You know, even Firefox itself is funded. It's a, you know, Mozilla Corporation, and they were worried that Google was going to stop funding them with the rise of Chrome. And they are a big contributor to that. So it is all, I hate to use that term, but it all takes a village. But it really, really, really does.
Good points, actually. We have another new app that's being talked about quite a bit here recently. It's called Flexi, F-L-E-K-S-Y. And we have a demonstration by David Woodbridge. This is a text input app for your iOS device. And the idea behind this is that you approximate where letters are on the screen. This sounds kind of mobile speak Android-ish to me, if I understand how that works. So you approximate, you get close, but the app is smart enough to know, okay, you didn't exactly hit the R right dead on, but we know that's what you mean. And so it's kind of interesting because in David's demonstration, he was trying to make an error to show you how to correct it, and he couldn't make the app.
He couldn't do it. He had to do it several times. I was chuckling at that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you type something like T-U-I-S, it knows that the U is somewhat close to the H on the keyboard, and so it discerns what pattern you probably meant. This is still in beta right now, at the time of this recording anyway, so it's not yet available in the App Store, but I'm very much looking forward to getting this, especially because as you type using this, you don't get letters echoed to you as you're typing them, which it sounds like that might be a little bit off-putting, but it actually means that you could speed up your typing significantly because you don't have to stop and listen after each letter press. Yeah, there you go.
You got it. I'm kind of curious because I apparently missed the beta window, as did a lot of people. They actually cut it off and it's full. But I know you can import what you've typed into other things, like if you're sending a text message to someone.
Right.
My question is, like, you know, if you're really texting back and forth to someone, how awkward is that?
I think there are going to be times when this is not the way to go.
Yeah.
If you have just a sentence to text back, you're going to want to use the regular keyboard present in the texting app, because otherwise you've got to load Flexi, which at least the first time you load it, apparently it takes quite a long time to load. Then you got to type in your message. Actually, you've got to turn off VoiceOver first, then type in your message, then turn VoiceOver back on to do whatever else you want to do. So this would be more for, I think, writing either a very long text or responding to email and that sort of thing.
No, it just made me think of another round of messed up home buttons. Because people matching them so many times, and when Jamie said text message, that's where my mind went. Was I'm already in another app, and here comes another reply. Oh God, I got to reply to that. All right, fine.
Yeah.
One of the things that I like about my new Droid 4 is that you can actually hold on a number, and it brings up four or five canned responses, and you can actually go in and edit them. And so I kind of go away is what one of mine has right now.
Nice.
That is pretty good. People are always looking for new voices to try out, especially with NVDA. You know, I'll give eSpeak credit. It is responsive. It's not the most pleasant thing I've ever listened to, but it is fast. But now you can buy more voices from AT Guys. You can buy the...
It's basically the entire vocalizer package, isn't it? So you get all languages, all voices, all languages, or at least a significant number of them. So you don't buy these voices separately. You just get a single package. And I believe it's $95 from AT Guys. And Steve Nutt at Computer Room Services is selling this in the UK. And these are only for NVDA. So this is not a SAPI 5 version of the vocalizer voices. Rather, this is tied to use with NVDA. And if you're wondering why would I want to do that, it's going to be much more responsive than using it through SAPI 5. So this has been optimized to work with NVDA, and there are probably some pricing negotiations that happened as well to bring this many voices to you that cheaply.
And just go look at eSpeak on YouTube or other places, or go hear samples, and you will understand why some might not want to use eSpeak.
Right.
I have that option on my Google phone, and I choose not to use it. Pico is bad, but not as bad as eSpeak sometimes.
Why is everyone always hating on me? What did I do wrong? Blah, blah, blah.
Walmart has some good news for us. You can order talking prescription containers, labels for them. On June 8th, Walmart announced this, and you need to get a ScriptTalk. That's a little machine, correct? I'm actually not familiar with the...
Yes.
Okay.
I haven't seen them, but I believe Envision America will be at both the NFB and ACB conventions, which we'll be covering. So perhaps we will bring you a look at the ScriptTalk label reader from them. And I believe you can get this. Can you get the machine free? I know that the labels come free.
I believe the machine as well, is my understanding.
We have an article in the show notes.
Yes, yeah. So you can go take a look at at how that works. Right now, this is only for in-store pickup in 3 Walmart stores, but you can get your prescriptions by mail order. So you can request the talking label along with the ScriptTalk reader and get your prescriptions by mail order from Walmart.
In general tech this week, we have an article about clickjacking and likejacking. Just what I needed, more ways for spammers to entice me to, spammers and scammers, I guess, really.
Yeah.
Cross-site scripting ahoy. Here we go again.
So basically, there are a couple of scenarios we can talk about. You click on a video link that someone sends you. And when you try to play the video, you actually buy a product. And I'm thinking that's just plain illegal. Forget.
Yeah, that's not
nice.
Cool.
Because
it's got another page embedded in this link that you click. And it's not visible. So you think, I just click play and I get to see Lady Gaga dancing on the roof of a building wearing a scary dress or whatever. And instead, or in addition to, you've just either bought a product or at the very least, sent some traffic to a website that gets money from having a certain amount of traffic. Then you might be encouraged to click the like button. And so that spreads the fun to all your friends as well.
Here you go. Malware for everybody. Yay!
Yes. Don't say I never gave you nothing.
Absolutely. You thought my Farmville things were fun. You know? Somehow Jamie got another story about Facebook in this week.
I got another.
I know. I'm picking. I can't get away from Facebook to save my life.
Know.
One of the better ways to get out of this is don't log in automatically. Or if you are in Facebook or you are in a service like YouTube, go to the log out button. It won't completely stop this problem, but it keeps a lot of that from coming over and grabbing other parts of whatever web browser you're using and then spreading it across to all your friends. So that way, you know, it kind of localizes things. I do this often. I used to use NoScript a lot on Firefox, and then my wife would go back and like enable all these sites. It's like, no, the whole purpose of this was to keep this from happening. Stop. But it's really funny. If you start really blocking a lot of this script, you'll find out that the web is broken in many, many ways, but it's a lot safer, sadly. And that's because some of this stuff has just gotten pervasive. But logging out of Facebook or not logging into Twitter automatically or not doing some of that, it's a pain to put in your password. I get that. But it is a little safer, not just for clickjacking, but in case someone else hops on your computer like, hey, I want to check my email for a minute. Oh, wow, you're friends with so-and-so?
Actually, and we really do have a positive Facebook story. At least I think this is a little more
there
on the positive side. What happens when you report abuse on Facebook? Where does that go? Well, apparently there are four safety teams that deal with this. Four teams, period, I should say. The first one is the safety team, and it deals with violent and harmful behavior. The hate and harassment team deal with hate speech and that sort of thing. Then you have your abusive content team, which deals with scams, spams, and sexually explicit content. And finally, the access team deals with hacks and impersonations. What kind of a job would that be to have, man? Wow.
Yes, to figure out hey, this is written grammatically correctly. Obviously, somebody has hacked this account, and that's not that person writing it.
Wait a second. That seems strangely suspicious. How about, where's your leet speak?
Right.
I'm sure that there must be lots and lots of this, especially with cyberbullying and other things that have been very popular on Facebook. And I'm sure that they have great war stories to tell about trends that emerge. Funny enough, there are some other Facebook stories. This week, Ricky and I noticed that Facebook said that they're going to drop the Facebook credits by the end of the year. So I guess they're just going to link it directly to real money as opposed to made up funny money, space credits, Facebook style. Zynga took a tumble this week, actually, and that had a lot of people wondering about, can Facebook keep things going in the shadow of the IPO? And I saw today, as we're about to record, the story that you're going to be able to actually go in and edit your comments now on Facebook. So you don't have to actually repost twice where you see someone make a typo and then post the exact same thing again corrected.
Yeah.
Double posting. So that's kind of neat. It seems like that's a long time coming.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, honestly. Agreed. I think, you know, the sort of crackdown on the response to abuse on Facebook, that's been a long time coming as well. Mm-hmm. The article points out that in its infancy, the author of the article got death threats and all sorts of fun stuff, and Facebook's response was pretty much non-existent. Oh, well, you know, hope they don't kill you, but not our problem.
Yeah, that's the web.
The risk you take.
Did you read our terms of service? All 14 pages.
All homicides. We are not liable for any homicides.
On Thursday in every month beginning with R.
Yes. So they've apparently gotten a lot better about this, and that's good because it's, you know, the article is basically saying Facebook is growing up. They're finally a little more out of the let's get as many users as we want, but not really think this through as far as privacy and protecting members and so on. Now they're having to think about those things.
It's so funny because they could take a page. MySpace had their team also. So did AOL. I mean, it's kind of depressing in a way because this isn't something new to the internet. This has always been one of the sides of the internet that we've all known about. And other services that have gotten this large or close to this large have the exact same thing. So, yeah, I guess they're still in startup mode. But I nominate that Ricky let us know how Facebook works on July 19th with Mountain Lion.
That'd be great because I'm sure she's going
to looking forward
upgrade.
To that.
Yes.
Yes, I will definitely upgrade.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't know absolutely that it's going to be on July 19th, but that is the rumor, and that rumor appears to be popping up on several different sites. And I remember with the Lion release, the rumors surrounding the date actually did turn out to be accurate. So this may be something that Apple's not trying to keep super secret.
That makes sense. It was middle of July last year for Lion.
For Lion, yeah.
Yeah, that makes about right.
So, Joe, maybe you and your wife could hop in a Chevy Spark or a Sonic and check out the new Eyes Free integration that's coming from Apple to one of those systems. You know, just go test drive a car for a little while.
Not a problem. I just paid off our Ford.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
I'll do that for the car. No, I don't think that.
Okay, well.
You know, one of the beautiful things, and this is what kind of kills the automotive portion of that for me, is in Houston, we are kind of spread out. It's like New York, but flat. Mm. And you can actually drive for 50 miles in this city and still be in the city of Houston. I'm not joking.
Wow.
Houston's kind of big. So anytime you see any of these, like the Tesla Roadster or any of those, it's always like, man, that would be really great as long as there's a charging station at the end of wherever we're going because we'll have to charge.
Yeah.
Okay, we're here. It's going to be another 18 hours before we can go home. So everybody have a great time and I'll see you here in a bit. But this is kind of cool because everybody kind of sort of divvying up the major car manufacturers. Ford is using Windows Automotive, which is Ford Sync. And then there are some others looking at Google for some of what they're doing with Eyes Free and stuff like that. And of course, BMW and Chevy and others are looking towards Apple. And so you would have, and this already exists for some auto manufacturers, you can actually start your car from your iPhone. And you can actually set the air conditioner and the radio station and all these cute, neat things. So when you come out of the grocery store, you know, where did we park? Oh, there's my car. It just started.
But I just stole someone's phone. Now I'm going to take it into the parking lot and see which car starts when I tell it to you.
That's correct. It's some people have done that. The cool thing, though, is that, you know, with turn-by-turn coming in iOS 6 and some other apps, anything that you know, allows me to sit there and change the radio on my wife while we're driving is awesome. So I love this technology that you're able to use it. Apple also has a patent for a steering wheel controller.
Yeah.
So it's like a touch screen in the middle of your steering wheel, which then means, I guess, you could then get into some hellacious accidents by, no, officer, I was swiping.
Oh, that would be so bad.
I'm sorry. Sorry, I got a text in and my Netflix kind of jumbled up there. You know, it always does when I cross under the bridge.
Horn. I didn't mean to.
Where's the horn button? Oh, look, I gave somebody a smiley face. Oh, no.
Yes, I am a blind driver, officer, but VoiceOver quit talking, so I don't know what happened. All of my
Navigon
cues went away.
Always quits when I go under that tunnel. I don't know why.
Google's not going to be outdone. The rumored Google Assistant apparently is in process. They're definitely working on it. Going to probably use Google Plus and be voiced by Jeffrey from The Fresh Prince.
That is awesome. I would get it just for that.
I almost got the Tom Toms because they had the William Daniels from Knight Rider doing Kit. Yeah, there was a Kit version for Tom Tom and some other GPS. I think Garmin had it too.
Yeah.
And there was a Darth Vader one.
Oh, and yes, Homer, there was.
Yeah, there was a Homer one. But that's awesome. That's super cool.
What I'm wondering about this Google Assistant, though, is we talked a few months ago about something called Robin, which was supposed to be... Yes, and Majel. So is this like a hybrid of all of those things, or were those all different code names for the same thing, or is this something completely different?
You know, we might find out next week on this very show when Lisa and Buddy work with Jamie, because we'll be at convention. We'll be winging our way to the NFB convention. Because next week is Google I.O. And they'll be talking about Jelly Bean, which may be Android 4.1. There's some screenshots that have leaked out that says that Galaxy 3 from Samsung is running Android Jelly Bean 4.1. So I guess we'll find out a lot more next week on this very show with Buddy, Lisa, and Jamie.
It's kind of cool because last week we talked about Apple. This week we are going to talk about Microsoft and Windows. Next week we got to talk about Google, or get to talk about Google. So it's kind of fun to be able to share the love a little bit.
The month of tech continues.
Yes, it does.
It's not a slow news month.
Any and all AT news that might crop up between now and, when July 4th, 5th, then, well, later, 10th.
Yeah. And the week after in Louisville when you go to ACB.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
you know, everybody can actually help us with the convention coverage this year by leaving us an iReport, telling us what's going on, telling us what division meeting you're in, telling us about what you find, if the coffee bar, the mocha's not so hot. Let us know. We want to know, and you can send us emails at resources@saratalk.com, but we would really love to have your iReports, because as we post our audio from the convention floors to SPN Radio, which you can get through, of course, through iBlink Radio, and you can hear the live coverage, we'll be sprinkling in people's comments and what they find at conventions. So you can actually help us cover Dallas and Louisville for Saratalk.
That will be awesome, actually. It'll be a lot of fun. Well, in not so awesome news, it is confirmed that Flame was created by the U.S. and Israel to slow Iranian nuclear programs.
But wait a minute. No. We just said a couple of weeks ago that Israel was like, nuh-uh, it's not us. Don't look at us. We didn't do it. Yeah.
Apparently the NSA, CIA, and the Israeli military all had a hand in this. It's pretty interesting to read in the article some of the things that it did or does. It collects useful info in disrupting Iran's nuclear program. I could touch off a cyber arms race. Well, that's always exciting to think about. Sounds like I would enjoy reading that in a good Tom Clancy novel. But
there you go. Let's keep that in the fiction world, please.
Yes, yes.
Keep it speculative.
I suspect we ain't heard the end of that stuff. So
I think we may have heard the end of RIM.
Well, we keep thinking so, and then we keep having more stories about... you know, and I feel so badly about this because RIM accessibility is doing some very cool things. Stuart Lawler, a bit later in the podcast, brings us a demonstration of the screen reader that can now be found for free on certain BlackBerry handsets. So, again... These guys are doing some great things in terms of accessibility, but the business itself is having some problems, as we all know. They've just dropped the price of the playbook by about 66%.
Yeah.
Ouch. Man.
Yeah, that's and then they've made some choices with BlackBerry 10 that are very, very interesting as well. And again, I think this is another one of those who can tell us bad news first, Nokia or RIM. And it again, we've said it many, many times, it illustrates how fast these things can turn. With computers, major corporations don't dump 600 million computers in a year. They just don't. But companies can actually jump on cell phone contracts with major vendors and kick out a fleet of handsets really quickly. And it is very common for major corporations to come by and say, hey, we got rid of phone X, here's phone Y, already pre-configured with your email, here you go. And it's important to know that.
And that's why I always laugh at these analysts who are saying, such and such OS is going to overtake iOS by 2016. And I'm thinking, that's 4 years from now. There's no way that any of us have any idea the shape of things that far down the road in this sort of industry. So you just can't make those kinds of predictions. But in other sad RIM news, Celestica, who was a manufacturing partner with RIM, so they were building a lot of this hardware, they've pulled out now. They're not going to be making BlackBerry phones anymore.
It's funny because the Fire was kind of a modified playbook. So that's how they got rid of a lot of playbook, you know, things is that they just modified that for the Kindle Fire. And that's it. Again, it's another one of those illustrations where, you know, you can make a really good piece of hardware, but sometimes if there just isn't rapid adoption or if there isn't, you know, I scoff at the, there's 100,000 apps, there's 500,000 apps. Yeah, but how many of those are good? That's what always plagued BlackBerry, you know, was that there just wasn't a lot of app makers behind it. Yeah, they had Angry Birds, but then what do you got after that? And so that's one of those where, you know, the software may tend to maybe make it out of there, like WebOS, like the BlackBerry OS.
Right.
I'm always reminded of Sega, who was a dominant video game player in the 90s, the Sega Genesis, the Saturn, the Dreamcast. But eventually Sega got rid of the hardware and went completely software, and it's probably what saved the company. It is entirely possible, and there's been rumors before, that they may just modify the BlackBerry OS or take the best parts of the BlackBerry and make them software for Android and iPhone and exist as a software maker. So stranger things have happened. And better yet, stranger things have happened on this show. We've still got Mailbag, some more stories, and Roundabout. And a bit of an interview there at the end. So stick with us. We've got more to come on Saratalk 114.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Saratech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back to Saratalk Podcast 114, and we promised we'd be giving Microsoft some love, so let's do that. This week, we just heard about Surface. So this is Microsoft's new bit of hardware. It is a tablet, but they've kind of put an interesting spin on it, or at least they want us to believe that. There have been the age-old arguments about tablet, PC, these are two different things. Quit trying to cram them into one thing. And Microsoft, I think, still wants to do that. They want to say, hey, Apple is wrong about this. You really can make a tablet that you can be just as productive with as you can with a PC. So what they've done is they've provided information about the Surface. That information does not include pricing or exactly when it will be here or any of those other minor details. But rumor says this is going to be about $599, and it's only going to have Wi-Fi initially. Again, that is a rumor. But the interesting thing about the Surface is, yes, this is a tablet, so you got a touchscreen, but you have a cover which doubles as a keyboard. So now you're not carrying this other accessory with you if you don't want to be typing on a little touchscreen keyboard.
Let's see, they've already got smart covers at Apple, and Microsoft just took smart glass. So intelligent cover?
Yeah, something like
cover?
That.
Snazzy cover? Trapper Keeper? No, that's taken. Oh, rats. That would have been good. I like Trapper Keeper.
That would have been awesome.
The cool thing about this is that they didn't tell their partners, hardly any of them at all, that they were doing this. This was
one
they decided, like, right at the end of WWDC, like that Thursday, they sent out invites and they said, you want to be in LA for this thing? We're not telling you what it is. So there was rampant speculation, like, was it a Nook color? Because, you know, Microsoft is working with Barnes & Noble. And, you know, is this the Courier 2 or some other? I mean, there were all sorts of wild, rampant speculation. And Microsoft pulled a wonderful Apple-like moment where they really got the press interested. And then they brought out Steve Ballmer for some reason, which I don't understand because that pretty much ruined
it for me. And everything went downhill from there.
After that. You know, and the day after, which is always the fun thing to read, after everybody's gotten over the high of the announcements, there's always the armchair quarterbacking the day after, was the, you know, why are they doing this? This makes no sense. This is a stupid move. And then slowly but surely, about 12 hours later, Gizmodo and a couple of other articles came out was, you know, this makes a lot of sense. I can see why Microsoft would make a reference tablet, because if you look at the way the Android tablet market has been going, there's a lot of garbagey Android tablets out there. And it really sours the experience for people and ends up giving Apple more people buying the iPad because they know, quote unquote, it works. So it worked kind of in Android's disfavor to do this. Microsoft has sat there, watched the Apple way, watched the Google way, shuddered and went, we're not going to do that. But what we will do is we'll make this reference tablet. And everybody who wants to make a bad tablet, it's on their own head, because we're going to have this really awesome piece of kit out there. And people have really loved the design who have seen it. And they've really loved the response who've seen it. Now, there wasn't a lot of hands-on demos, so there's probably still a lot of demo magic going on here. But the idea that you could have a tablet that is quote-unquote Windows with Office is very appealing to a lot of people who really just know Windows and don't necessarily want to learn a new operating system or be tied to iTunes or any number of things. So for Microsoft, this is kind of getting back to form and to take Surface, which was released 4 years ago as a gigantic table, which is actually used in Las Vegas and places where the menu appears on the table and you can draw things on it and put your drink on it and things like that. This isn't anything new for Microsoft. They've been playing around with tablets for a very long time. So is Apple, Pippin. So, you know, The iPad wasn't their first attempt. But now as these things get more mainstream, and certainly as someone develops the right one, everybody's going to want to follow.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the interesting thing, because Microsoft isn't really a hardware company. I mean, they'll do it, but We don't know if we're going to see them making this thing long term. It's speculated that they're doing this as, hey, here's an example to follow. Now, we want everybody else to jump on board and start making these things so that we no longer have to. We just kind of have to get the concept out there and get people making these things.
So would you guys want a tablet that's more compatible with Microsoft, that has your favorite Microsoft stuff, or could sync to SkyDrive?
I could see using something like this if I wanted a tablet. I'm still the kind of user who feels comfortable in front of a PC, or if I'm mobile, you know, just give me my phone. But I can see this thing really having a market. And I'm very curious about what the keyboard looks like, because if this thing is supposed to be still really thin, is this a giant touch keyboard, or
it looks kind of chiclet-y, actually?
It actually does have keys of some sort.
Yes, yes, that, by some of the descriptions that I've seen so far, and it doesn't mean that there won't be aftermarket tablets too, the same way that there is for iPad.
Right. Well, I'm wondering what the feel is going to be like typing on this thing, because if it were pleasant, yeah, I can see using one of these. But, you know, the question for me still is, why not just have a laptop, except that this thing is 1.5 pounds as opposed to, you know, a laptop, which is going to be a little heavier.
Well, there's that. Okay, barring accessibility, but let's table that for now, because we don't know anything about that. Jamie?
I kind of like Ricky. I would be interested in looking at it. I'm having a hard time really finding a compelling reason why I personally would want one. You know,
I don't even have an iPad, and don't particularly want one.
Right.
I know. I said it.
Away with you! What? No, I.
I actually would like one because of some of the work I do as a music therapist. There are some apps that are starting to interest me a little more that I could use with the kiddos that I work with. But other than that, I don't necessarily want an iPad.
Okay, so that's the consumer idea, right? For us as consumers. Now, if you're an employer, I can now have a tablet in the boardroom that I can control, that is VPN'd, that is group policy, that I can lock off Facebook, that I can, you know, make sure that you're doing your work with this tablet. And that's, you know, being pushed very heavily towards enterprise. And for myself personally, I have a lot of my stuff in Windows Media. I have a lot of stuff in a SkyDrive, actually. I know I'm one of the very few and in the strange. But that would be very helpful, not to have to jump through hoops to put it into Dropbox, to get it over here, to get there. If it's something that would allow me to use all the Windows programs that I currently use for work and love, and not have to do a crazy, you know, backflip to figure out how to do this with a three-finger swipe and a prayer, then I would really, really like this. If, again, barring accessibility, you know, that would be really cool. Now, Ricky said that she would love to be able to do things like this more on a phone than on a tablet. Well, funny enough, Ricky, about a day or so later, here comes Microsoft with Windows Phone 8.
Yeah.
Yes. And they did some interesting and, in my mind, smart things with this. Namely, they, for any of you who are using Windows Phone 7 or 7.5, this is going to make you sad, but they're saying, no, we're not going to upgrade any of these phones. You know, once we release this, then we're kind of starting from scratch.
Makes my iPad rant seem kind of small last week, actually.
Yes, it does.
But I think how about Microsoft, a $2,000 phone contract? Ha ha.
Yeah, ouch. But yeah. I think Microsoft had to do this, and this was probably a response to them looking at Android fragmentation and going, you know, we don't want to make that same mistake. So we're just going to say, nope, whenever this is released, you either buy a new phone or, you know, hope you don't care about having the latest operating system, because this is how we're doing it. I think that this phone has the potential to be very successful. And one of the reasons is, as you said, Joe, wanting to be able to do, or as I said, and you said that I said.
Usually agree with you. It's okay.
The desire for people to have the same look and feel across all these different devices is very strong. So with enterprise, this is going to be great because you've got Exchange and SharePoint and all sorts of Microsoft things that are huge in enterprise that you're going to be able to do easily on the phone as well. You're used to what the thing looks like, assuming that your enterprise upgrades to Windows 8, which is probably not going to happen immediately.
You are so set. Because that's what's here. Even those of you who have Windows 7 devices, you get the upgrade 7.8 for Windows Phone 7, which gives you the start screen, but not as many features as Windows Phone 8. I can't decide if that's a slight or a snub. It seems, either way, it seems like a very rude gesture towards those who are early adopters. The thing about this is that you can really start to see Microsoft do something that we've all begged them to do, which is pull teams together and utilize its brands. And I'm not completely sure that Xbox Music and Xbox Video is the way to go, because it kind of changes the definition of what Xbox is, which is, of course, what they're, that's the whole point of it. But it's always scary when you go to move a major brand into a new space and then you damage it. And Windows Live, anybody? Yeah, so there's been some changes there, but it seems like where Windows and Office teams are going, it does seem like Microsoft is finally taking all their divisions and unifying them under a banner or a common idea, or taking all these wonderful technologies that they make and finally tying them all together. And it seems like it took Apple to kick them in their complacency to do it. With that said, when these things do happen, what I'm waiting for is the kind of backlash of people going, wait a minute, bundling, you're bundling, antitrust. And I don't know.
Well, I'm wondering if that's why Microsoft didn't do this for such a long time, because they were afraid that that very thing was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But we are in a very different world than we were in 1996 or 7, whenever all this stuff was happening with the EU and Internet Explorer and so on. Mm-hmm. Now they have something to point to and say, but what about Apple? They did this and this. And what about Google? They do this and this. So I think they're feeling a little more comfortable about doing that. And that's not to say that there won't be backlash. I'm sure there will be.
But it was nice to see in the press where it wasn't the old gray Microsoft ain't what she used to be. There was a lot of, they're really kind of sort of getting it. And there were people that were excited this week that Microsoft was really starting to come around and leverage some of what they do best. And they are a software company. That's really what they do best. And they don't really, they talked about in this presentation that they're a maker of hardware for 30 years. Yeah, I guess if you can consider the mouse and, all my Microsoft keyboard and all that, sure, whatever. But they don't really make the Xbox either. Neither does Apple. Apple uses Foxconn and other companies. So, they design it. In fact, Apple says designed in Cupertino. So it's great, though, to see that there's competition. Now, there was an article from Pateek Patel about what accessibility is possible in Windows Phone 8. Now, this is very early goings. It is very preliminary, but there is some ideas that there will be some ability to do accessibility on Windows Phone 8, because as a developer, you'll be able to make some changes and be able to slide, hypothetically, again, to Windows 8 development to Windows Phone 8 development. So there's kind of a path for you to have your apps across multiple devices in the ecosystem. And there's already, of course, NVDA has shown some accessibility that they have already working in Windows 8. So that gives you an idea that there is hope for us there. But I don't want to get speculative here, because it's not going to be until October, November. And again, Android 1.6 is when TalkBack emerged. Explore by Touch showed up in 4.0. The iPhone took three, almost four versions before it had really good accessibility. So you got to give them some time and let them develop the ecosystem.
It looks like the major carriers are going to be on board. Verizon certainly has said that it intends to. And this is important for Microsoft, that the phone carriers push this thing.
Yeah, AT&T is actually the biggest supporter of Windows phones, or at least they have been with Windows Phone 7, and that's probably going to continue with Windows Phone 8. We also have T-Mobile, their Windows phone supporters. Verizon, they have mentioned, I think we'll sell these things, but I don't know if they're going to be as out there as AT&T with really pushing these phones. So it remains to be seen. And of course, there are other carriers. We don't know what Sprint's going to do and so on.
Verizon has said that they're interested. So that if you can get AT&T and Verizon, those are your two you know, big guns that you make
sure. Yeah, but I thought Verizon said they were interested, but they were sort of cautiously interested. Am I wrong about that?
They say that about everybody.
You're right.
They said that about the iPhone. They said that about, you know, just about all. But I can tell you what is being said in a lot of consumer electronic magazines that I follow and others is that the carriers want a third player. They want a horse mm-hmm. race. They don't want a two, you know, horse sprint. And a lot of carriers are really getting fed up with the iPhone. They just don't want to subsidize it anymore. They don't want to have to bow down to Apple. They don't want to have to be told what they can and can't do on their services, which, you know, leads into that rumor again about Apple turning around and buying Sprint or somebody, which there was that story about 6 months ago around Steve Jobs passing that he was interested in buying a carrier and controlling it all the way through. Mm-hmm. There's going to be, if there's a credible third player, there's going to be a lot of pushback. It's going to be another world, I would think, in about another year. And we've already talked about prepaid phones and, you know, loss of subsidy before. So I think, again, we're looking at a very unique landscape if Windows Phone turns out to be one of those phones where Microsoft aggressively gives commissions to those who sell it in the stores, because that's where the decision maker happens. For those who are sighted, we base our decision buying power on, is it accessible for us right. with blindness technology or that for low vision? For the sighted person, a lot of times it just comes down to cost and is it pretty and how snarky the salesman is on the floor.
Yeah. What does the salesperson like? What? Yeah. You don't want that phone. That
no, that's so passe. Everybody's got that phone. This week, I love this phone. You should buy it.
Yes.
Because I'd like to win this fruit basket, which is part of the contest, if I sell all these phones. So really, you'd be doing me a great big favor by making me healthy if you would buy this phone, because then I'd have a lot of fruit to eat here at the store. So there you go.
Well, if ever there was a week to look at the show notes, this is it, because there are way too many articles for us to cover this week
in
detail. So go over there to saratalk.com and read to your little heart's content.
Same for Triple Click Home and that Android show. Both had new episodes go up. So you can hear about what everybody thinks about what's going on in Android. There was some accessibility news over there. And hear what Pete and Elena and Buddy and their special guest John had to say about all the WWDC announcements over at tripleclickhome.com.
Coming up, we have the mailbag and a roundabout story that is kind of sad, but also, I think, a rather interesting story that we can talk about right here on the Serotalk podcast.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
This is the Serotalk Podcast.
And we're back once again on Serotalk Podcast 114. Let's open up the mailbag.
We've learned to stand way back now.
Yes, way back.
Mail sleigh. It's not even Christmas yet.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
It is. We love the comments. Actually, we really do. It's great to get those. And it is funny. I think Joe said it before, but sometimes they come in almost instantly after the podcast. You can tell when someone just finished listening to a podcast and commented by the length of time
really
it takes.
Neat. Yeah. So keep those cards and letters coming in. First thing we've got is an iReport from Amy Rule about the MLB app.
Batter up.
Hello, I want to thank you for the informative and well-produced podcast that you're doing. Keep up the good work. This is Amy Rule, by the way, from Boston area in Massachusetts. I also wanted to thank you for submitting some information and kudos to MLB for their at-bat app. I happen to be a beta tester for them, and I think they've made significant progress to their obviously are things that need to be changed and improved upon, as is true with many apps that appear in the App Store. But I think they've really made significant efforts to improve the accessibility of the at-bat app in particular. So thanks for that recognition and for your balanced perspective on the importance of patience around the accessibility of mainstream apps, as well as those produced and developed by blind people. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Amy. And yes, it is quite gratifying to see what happens when the community begins to make its feelings known about a particular thing and hoping that it will work better, and actually seeing the developers respond in a positive way.
And I'll be listening a lot next year because my Houston Astros go to the American Leagues, and that's going to be so weird. So weird. I can't. I've been a major league, national leaguer for a long time. Unless the Astros move, then I won't care anymore. It's like, baseball will be dead to me. Then we have an email here, Ricky. We actually have several emails. Let's see what we got here first.
We do have lots of emails. The first one comes from Doug, and he's talking about the Aftershocks headphones. Mike Calvo did a review back in September, I think.
February.
For this unit, and Doug did buy them based on this recommendation. And he poses an interesting question. What would happen if the wearer of one of these devices placed their head against somebody else who was wearing one of these things? Haha, an interesting new way to transfer data. I guess it depends on how much hair and the location of the device and how big your head is and so on. So yeah. Thanks, Doug, for posing that interesting hypothetical question.
Maybe they would fuse together and you would be stuck with that person for life. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah, I think I've seen that movie. Will it be like NFC or that app called Bump? Where you transfer data and remember...
Oh, yeah, where you kind of touch your devices together.
Touch your phones.
Yep.
Yeah. So, or dancing cheek to cheek and passing along information in a very strange fashion. There's all of that that comes to mind. But you know what it won't be like? It won't be like teaching remotes in the old days when you had to have the IR remote look at the other IR remote. Mm-hmm. And you had to make sure that they were lined up. And then you press like this button to train the other remote and they would flash at each other. And... You know, in fact, transferring data over IR was just a bad idea.
Good thing we've come a long way since then.
What? Tapping devices?
We've come a long way with the navigation apps as well. We've got two emails, one from Pierre and the other from Giorgio, both of whom are recommending MyWay Classic as an iPhone GPS solution. Pierre talks about how this reminds him of Lodestone, only perhaps a bit better. So you might check that out. That's My Way Classic.
Got a huge email here from Dave about attending a BlackBerry training seminar. We mentioned earlier about BlackBerry accessibility and that there's been a lot of information coming out about it. And we still have some information to come. Later, Jamie will interview Stuart about the BlackBerry accessibility that's currently available. And this long email is really so good, we want to put it and some of the others into show notes. So remember... again, if you really want more information than what we're telling you here on the podcast, or you can't wait for the next Serotalk podcast, run over to serotalk.com and read the show notes, or follow us on Twitter. You can follow twitter.com/serotalk. A lot of stories that end up on this podcast actually come from that Twitter feed. So if you want an advanced idea of what's going on, or if you have a thought, like, let's say with WWDC or Google I.O., if you have some Google I.O. predictions, send them in. Leave us an iReport over at iBlink Radio, which is available for Android and Apple iOS. And, of course, you can also do some other ways of leaving us information. What would those ways be, Mr. Jamie?
You can email resources@serotalk.com. You can also leave iReports over if you have an iOS device or an Android device. Feel free to do that. And finally, you can call the Blab line at 866-997-2522. It's time now for Roundabout. Well, this week we have a story about a 57-year-old gentleman by the name of Tony Nicholson. Tony had a stroke in 2005 that left him paralyzed from the neck down. So absolutely has no motor function whatsoever. He can't move his arms or his legs. And Tony has requested to have the right to end his life legally. He's in the UK, and he's going to go to the High Court and ask for permission to do this if he chooses. The reason that I believe this story is important to us today, there are a couple of reasons. First, it's tech-related, because he is using Twitter by tracking with his eyes, and he's able to actually type using his eyes, which is phenomenal, first of all. But I found the article interesting because at the very end, it says that he isn't really wanting to die just yet. He wants the right to if he chooses, but he's not ready to end his life. He's got two daughters and a wife. So my question kind of for the community and for us today just to think about is it possible that by communicating on Twitter that he might actually find a social outlet that he didn't know he had?
That's a very interesting thought, because he has, you know, he's been in, he's calling it locked-in syndrome, I suppose, because he, you know, he can't talk or can't communicate any other way than through his eyes. And he's talking about the lack of dignity and just how life has sort of become more troubling than anything else. But with Twitter, you're right, he may very well get a social outlet and be able to communicate with others like him, because there are others like him, you know, in a similar situation, using the same type of equipment to communicate with friends and family and perhaps even Twitter. He might be able to talk about the things that he used to enjoy and make new friends on Twitter and so on. But the other thing that may happen is that he may get a lot of support for his decision to, you know, request that he be allowed to end his life. And that's probably one of the reasons that he was on Twitter in the first place, was to get other voices joined to his own, indicating that he does have the right to make this decision.
I think of Stephen Hawking. You know, just because that individual is in the situation that he's in, he still does amazing things and is probably one of the smartest men on the planet, and demonstrates to me, again, personally, that physical disability doesn't necessarily need to stop you from achieving amazing things.
And that's the interesting thing to me. I don't think that a decision should be based on the fact that his disability keeps him from doing things, because there are people like Stephen Hawking who, again, lead very full and enriching lives regardless of their disability. But if an individual chooses not to embrace life and not to do these amazing things that they would be capable of if they decided to, what does that mean? And I think it's going to be a very interesting decision for the courts to try and decide, you know, when is it okay, when is it not okay? And it's not going to be an easy decision.
No.
I don't know if this is...
For those of you who've never seen it, go watch Soylent Green, because this is one of those moments where a film has actually kind of already touched on this. And I think Soylent Green is the classic Charlton Heston film that kind of discusses the rights of the individual and you know, the state and all of that fun stuff. It's a very old science fiction-y film, but like The Omega Man. In fact, it came during The Omega Man and Planet of the Apes and Soylent Green, when Charlton Heston did all these crazy sci-fi movies. But I think it's still very relevant, as long as you don't know the spoiler. A lot of people probably don't know the big spoiler at the end. But Soylent Green talks about that and you know, choosing and things in that era. Just don't watch Logan's Run after that, because that's people people who reach the age
Carousel.
Of 30 have to go to Carousel, and you know, so in fact they're probably a good double feature if you really want to do something like that. It's the right of the individual, and I can understand his situation, especially when Shakespeare, I used to say this all the time at the Division for Blind Services, it's better to have loved and lost than never have loved before. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. For some people with physical disability, that's not the case. It's such a life-altering event. It so changes them, especially if they were, say, a mountain climber or something that was really physically active. It takes a long time to adjust But it's we've said it on this show many times, it's not the end of the world, and it certainly doesn't stop any of us and probably doesn't stop a lot of our listeners from doing what they feel like they want to do. So
exactly. But you can't legislate how someone is meant to feel or meant to react to, you know, when something like this happens. And that's the issue.
Yeah. But it's a very interesting thing because, like Jamie said, it is a tech story. And prior to this eye tracking technology, how would he have been able to communicate these feelings?
Right.
So
would they have even known that he was aware still?
Exactly.
That's a good question, yeah.
So it's like you said, Ricky, he's reaching out, which is good, because that usually means that there is a need to discuss and comment about it, and you know, it helps teach and learn by others. So that is a positive sign. You know, if he didn't want to talk, that would probably be worse. But
right.
Let us know what you guys think. This is a very heavy topic, and we usually don't go into things like this on the show. So let us know what you all think about this or any of our stories. We'd love to hear from you.
Coming up next, we have that interview with Stuart Lawler talking about BlackBerry accessibility. Very interesting conversation with Stuart. You don't want to miss that. Thank you for joining us today. We've had a great time. We've talked about a lot of different topics. As I said earlier, way too much stuff in the show notes to cover in any detail. So go to saratalk.com, read the show notes. We've already talked about how to give us feedback, and Patrick's going to give you that information again at the end of the show.
Come find us in Dallas.
Yes, Ricky and Joe in Dallas, Lisa, Buddy, and myself manning the podcast next week, and then maybe you can catch up with me the following week at ACB.
Louisville. Gotcha.
All right.
Bluegrass ahoy.
Well, until next time, everyone, have a great week.
Thanks for listening.
I'm visiting today with Stuart Lawler, and we're going to talk about BlackBerry accessibility. And Stuart, welcome to the Saratalk podcast.
Cheers, Jamie. It's I must say it's very nice to finally be with you guys. I'm an avid listener, and as I think I said on a previous audio that you played, it's my weekly tech fix. So it's great to be here.
Well, a lot of people know you from your radio broadcasting. We can go ahead and just give a quick shout out to who you broadcast for.
So at the moment, I broadcast for hkcradio.com and on a Saturdays at 10 Eastern.
Excellent. So what kind of work do you do during the week?
So I work for the National Council for the Blind of Ireland, NCBI. We're a not-for-profit organization providing supports to people within the Republic of Ireland who have sight loss. I manage our rehabilitation training center in Dublin, but I am also responsible for some of the research and support around around how blind people use mobile devices. And I guess it's on this note that I'm speaking to you today.
Now, do you use a BlackBerry phone because your organization uses that platform, or just was that a choice of yours?
No, we don't use BlackBerries in work. And I suppose I need to say at the beginning that my primary device is still my iPhone. I haven't gone totally over. But when we had a relationship through NCBI with the people in RIM, and specifically with Greg Fields and his team in RIM since last year. And around the time RIM were bringing out the Clarity theme, which was the high contrast theme for BlackBerry OS 5, we got involved with those guys. And their commitment to accessibility, their willingness to talk to people, and their just general wanting to make sure that they were doing the right thing was something that really kind of impressed me from day one. So in May of this year, when BlackBerry Screen Reader was released, Greg got in touch again, and we've been doing a little bit of work in just looking at the devices and how it all works.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, from listening to Sarah talk, and those who are listening, we do talk about the fact that choice is great, and absolutely wish the best for every company that is working on accessibility. It sounds like RIM is doing some really good work in there.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's always going to be problems with what we might call a version one. And yeah, like, okay, at the moment, there are certainly some problems for people to install without sight. It is certainly far quicker if you have sighted assistance. But look, it's a free screen reader. it certainly does what they say it will do, in that it will allow you to manage your contacts, to read and send your text messages, your call logs, and manage your email and calendar. Now, outside of that, I've done a couple of things. For example, I've very successfully used Twitter for BlackBerry. I have had some success using the BlackBerry app world. It's certainly not fully accessible. And the web interface is not yet accessible either, but I know that that's something that those guys are very actively, you know, trying to work on. I also understand that BlackBerry Messenger is accessible actually as well, although I haven't used it.
Very good. So why BlackBerry? What's kind of the appeal? Is it just something new, something you want to work with, or?
Well, there's a couple of things you mentioned earlier on where people's organizations force them to use BlackBerry, and there are still organizations who are doing that. They've put a lot of investment into a structure which only works with BlackBerry, and that's what they're using. But me personally, Jamie, as well as just being curious and wanting to play with the device and wanting to really give feedback to a company who I think are genuinely committed to and interested in providing total accessibility, I'm a bit of I like hardware keyboards. You know, okay. I have an iPhone and I won't go anywhere without my Braille Pen 12. And whilst the Braille Pen 12 is great, it's another thing to carry. Put me with a touchscreen on my own and ask me to send a text, and it is a horrific experience, you know. Even already, and I've only had the BlackBerry about 2 weeks, I've been using Twitter very successfully, working with the device, lovely hardware keyboard. And of course, BlackBerry have been known for a long time for their hardware. And as a friend of mine said to me a while ago, he was talking about his touchscreen, and this is somebody with low vision, and he said, if we could just take the BlackBerry keyboard and stick it on the iPhone, I'd be very happy, you know.
Yeah. Well, very good. One of the things that I always look for is responsiveness. So how responsive is the screen reader with the phone right now?
It's pretty good. Of course, with BlackBerry, you have this their trademark trackpad. Mm-hmm. And the sensitivity of that depends to some degree on the responsiveness of the screen reader. And by that, I mean, if the trackpad sensitivity is very high, and your icons are in a list from, say, 1 to 25 on the home screen, you could very easily skip a few icons. So you may think the screen reader is not calling out everything. So RIM advise you, and indeed I would certainly echo this, to turn down the sensitivity initially, you know, until you get practiced. It's also a good idea, as was the case with the old Symbian system, to put your menu into a list view, at least for a while, so that you get to know what exactly is on your home screen. And then you can kind of move things around as you wish.
Very good. What voice is it using?
It uses the Nuance Samantha is the one I have, which is the US English. It also has UK English, French, Italian, and probably one or two other languages that I just can't remember off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. Very clear, which is nice. The speech is definitely clear. The screen reader is very configurable, so you can do all the sort of things you would expect to do. Set your typing rate, or rather set your speech rate, set your, whether you want typing echoes, words, none, level of punctuality, of punctuation, level of verbosity, caps lock indicator, password indicator, you know, those kind of things are all there. There's also what they call the convenience key, which is a bit like your insert key, maybe on system access, or your old talks key. Pressing that and then followed by other keys will sort of perform certain functions of the device.
I know there are probably many features that you would like to see. I'm certainly that way when I get a new device. What do you know what they're working on? What is coming?
Okay, I don't know what they're working on right now. I'm going to be meeting Greg Fields, is coming to Dublin as we are doing this recording. It's the 13th. Greg is coming to Dublin on the 15th to do a BlackBerry presentation for the Irish audience, I guess. And we're hoping to have lots of people at the National Council of the Blind. Mm. I do know that they are interested in improving the email experience. I will say that email reading on the device at the moment is a little tedious. So, for example, when you open the message, it reads all the headers, and you have to let it read everything before you can read the message itself. I'd like to see a little bit more, I suppose, responsiveness when you're typing on the device. There can be lags, and sometimes it misses words. I still have my key echo set to words because I'm still becoming, I guess, very familiar with the keyboard.
Right.
So I think if email was, I would actually prioritize email over web right now, Jamie, because it's something that they have working almost well. Mm-hmm. So they just got it right. And then obviously it'd be nice for web. But if we're looking at this from a business sense, I guess the corporate side are going to say, so how well does it do email? I want my people to be in touch, you know?
Right.
So I think let's get that right first and then move along. I do hear, I don't know if they've fully confirmed it, but I think they are very anxious to put this into BlackBerry OS 10. Sort of, you know, by default. Whether it will be in every device or whether it will be downloadable, I don't know. But it will be free and it will be there. Now, how they're going to operate it with their BlackBerry touchscreens will be another thing to see. Mm-hmm. Maybe they will make it available on the devices that have keyboards and touchscreens. I don't know.
I know right now there are just a couple of phones that it works with. What phone are you currently using?
Yeah, I've got the 9360, which is the European equivalent of, I think, the 9350, the Curve. I believe they all look more or less the same. They're just branded differently in different countries. So the 9360 is I think, would be described as sort of a low-end BlackBerry. I know here, for example, in the Irish market, you can get them free on a pay plan. And if you buy them prepay, they're about 150 euros, which might be about $180. So they're not hugely expensive.
Right.
So, but I would imagine that the range of phones is going to be broadened. The other thing I've had some time to play with is the BlackBerry PC software. So there's the desktop suite of applications that allows you to, you know, manage content between your computer and the device, copying music onto the device, synchronize your email and stuff. And I've found that to be just okay. And it's something I'd like to chat to them about to make that experience a little better.
So if a person was wanting to learn a little more and perhaps play with one of these phones, kind of what's the best way to go about that?
Well, I know blackberry.com/accessibility is where they have all their sort of accessibility documentation, frequently asked questions, and all that kind of stuff. blackberry.com/screen reader. There's also a BlackBerry user list for the screen reader, and that's at bbaccess@googlegroups.com. So I think you can subscribe to that through Google Groups. There's a couple of people on that list. We're using BlackBerries, and we're very happy to answer questions. And I guess if you want to see it in action, if you know anyone who has the Curve 93, 50, 60, or 70, you speak nicely to them, they might let you install it on their device.
Right. So I suppose I would be remiss in not asking, is this the same product as the Oratio was, or is this a completely different product?
Well, there's been a lot of people asking that. And, you know, certainly there are similarities. There's no mm-hmm. doubt there are similarities. The official line, I think, from RIM is that they did take it and they sort of rewrote it and put in their own slant based on user feedback. So, for example, the previous product did have a tendency to crash quite a bit. I haven't seen this at all as much with BlackBerry Screen Reader. I did have some initial problems, but that was more to do with the firmware on my device. And once that was updated, that was okay. I think this is a product very much in the evolution stage, Jamie. It is developing. They want to hear from us. They want to know what works and what doesn't. And I think, you know, get in touch with them. The guy who is actually programming the screen reader is a guy called Kang Chu, who's totally blind. So that has to be quite a good thing.
Yes. Yes, indeed. If people would like to get a hold of you and visit with you, what's some good contact info?
Sure. So you can email me at stuart@ncbi.ie. Or on Twitter, I'm Stuart Lawler, all one word, stuartlawler.
Very good. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to visit with us today. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Jamie, and hope to chat to you again.
All right. We've been visiting with Stuart Lawler here on the Serotalk podcast.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life. We'll be right back.